We have a nice, fabulous guest today. Very excited. He's returning to the show with his new version of the What Color Is Your Parachute Guide to Job Hunting Online. It's the 6th edition, which I'm sure he's pinching himself over, but I'm sure they could have 27 by now with the way it changes every single minute. But we are so lucky to have Mark Emery Bowles, who himself has done many different things: computer programmer, technical writer, musician, musical instrument maker, and he is an expert on using the internet to support the job hunt, and particularly with alternative career paths, which totally makes sense with his background. And he is co-authoring this book with his dad, Richard Nelson Bowles, who we've also had on the show a great number of times, who's the part of the kingdom that is What Color Is Your Parachute. So, Mark, welcome to our kingdom, Job Talk.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Hello, Mark. Paul Cameron is here with you, who happens to be an IT guy, so maybe you two can bond. And I'm Joy, so welcome to the show. This is a repeat performance, but a whole new book. And what we love about your books, you know, when they come out year after year, is that they're not just the same and you've kind of changed those and added a, you know, a chapter. They truly are different. How long does it take you to say, wait a minute, do you start the minute one book is done, working on your next book?
Pretty much. It actually starts while the previous book is going through the editing process. I'm already working on the next one.
Oh, my gosh.
Is it just thinking about all the things you forgot to put in this one?
Well, that's certainly part of it. And some of it is that I tend to write more than the book can fit. So there's always stuff that has to go in the next one. Because it didn't fit in this one.
Well, you captured my imagination, and all day I've been blabbing about it, because even though Job Talk's been on the air for 7 years, you have things in the book that I have never heard of, we've discussed. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, one of them that fascinated me was the word clouds and how you use those programs to really help, really, really help you apply to things, in addition to some other things as well. So can we talk about those for a little bit?
Sure. The word cloud, we've all seen them, even though we don't necessarily know what it is that we're looking at.
Right.
They're closely related to tag clouds. But if you've been on the internet and you've seen, say, anywhere between 5 and 10 lines of words, and they're all in different point types. Some of the words are very large. Mm-hmm. Some of them are very small. Mm-hmm. That's a word cloud or a tag cloud. And what it essentially is it's a very simple but very intuitive way of counting the frequency of words. Mm-hmm. And here's an example of where you might use one. Here you are making out your resume, and you know that these days you need to put in certain keywords in your resume in order for a employer to find you when he's searching resumes. So what you can do is take a number of job postings in the field that you're going to be looking at, and feed these into a word cloud generator, and the word cloud will kick out what words would go well in your keyword lines. And there's a number of websites listed in the book that are free word cloud generators that you can use to do this.
Like Wordle, WordSift, TwoCloud, yep.
Exactly, mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite?
Yeah, and I can't remember the name of it right off, but it's the second one. And
WordSift.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a little more artistic than the others.
Mm-hmm.
And it, I find that the results that it gives are just a little better.
Okay, now to get to you personally, since you have such an eclectic background, it's interesting. Usually, creative people don't get into, and I'm probably jumping in Paul's area here, you don't see as many creative souls into the IT arena. How do you combine all those, Mark?
Well, it's been a long life.
In 30 years, good job.
What I found was back in the years when I was a musical instrument maker, which was during the 70s and 80s, I developed an interest in computers when they were just coming out. I had a TRS-80 Model 1 with 4K of memory. Wow. And that was the apex of technology at the time. And I just got interested in programming, and over the years, that's just sort of morphed into a great interest in computers and now the internet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think there's a lot of technical people out there that might take offense to that, Julie.
I knew after I said it, the looks I was getting, Mark, if you could see the looks.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, they're essentially building, you know, maybe they're not building a house, but they're building an application. In order to make that application work, if it doesn't work the way you first set out to do it, you've got to be creative to come up with a different way to string those lines of code together to make sure that thing works. So,
yeah,
I mean, it's a different kind
okay.
of creativity, we will say.
The best programmers that I've known have always been creative people, and yeah. it's amazing how many are musicians.
Yes, the musician part I can see, because mm-hmm. that's math-related and all the... I just think that's probably why I didn't do well in math, you guys, probably because I can't see anything creative about 4 plus 2, you know. How can you be creative with that? So what you're saying is that when you're creating things, it's your own brain that's making that program. You're not sitting there with something that says you have to do it
exactly.
this way.
Exactly. Hmm. Yeah, and the math involved is really just a tool, just the same as using mm-hmm. a pair of pliers would be if you're fixing a sink. Hmm. So what's really involved in the programming is looking at the structure of how you want to accomplish a certain task, and the more elegant that is, the more the programmer enjoys it.
Ooh. Like composing music, right?
Yeah.
Putting the note, how you want the
yeah.
notes to go together.
Very, very much like that.
And I am not a talented either. And it does lead me to something
or
else.
Singing.
No. It does lead me to something else that you talk about here, which is so interesting. Besides the online tools, right, that help us know our personality, help us to discern what our skills are, which is all about chapter 3. You really talk about something I think people should think about is tests versus instruments. That concept of, you know, so when people get these results back and how people
right.
tell them what to do with them and, you know, how they should treat them, and a lot of people are freaked out by them,
mm-hmm.
the results. How should people maybe think about assimilating that information into their, really into their job search?
Well, the answer is very carefully. oftentimes, I think most of us remember when we were back in high school, you know, we got aptitude tests, mm-hmm. and the results were somewhat magical as to how they came about arriving at them, and not always too accurate. I know they certainly weren't in my case.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever somebody takes one of these tests, I mean, as you said, we dedicate chapter 3 to looking at various tests, but I really prefer to think of them as instruments. Many mm-hmm. of them are personality instruments or personality tests, but the whole point that I at least jokingly make in the book is that you can't really fail a personality test.
Right, that was going to be my next line. It's the only mm-hmm. test in school that I knew I wasn't going to flunk, mm-hmm. yes. I'm sorry, go ahead.
The main thing is that you should, if you're going to go the route of, I don't know what my skills are, I need to, you know, take some instruments or some tests or whatever you want to call them and figure out a little more about them, the main thing is to not depend too much on any one
mm-hmm.
and take a lot of different ones.
And you do highlight so many. You know, some I feel like I've heard of, some I didn't, some I think, oh, this would be good for this kind of person. You know, you really highlight. That's, again, why this book is so valuable, because you do redo it, you know, as we go on and find more tools. But you really have done a lot of the legwork for us. And you know what I mean? It's worth it. When people
yeah.
are completely stressed out, and sometimes when you're stressed out looking for a job, you cannot do the same kind of research you might do with a cooler head. You know, Mark and your you and your dad provide a cooler head for us with a bird's eye view from an expertise standpoint, and that is just really, really helpful. We commend you on that.
Thank you.
You know, I had a question for you. One thing that really piqued my interest was how you talk about specifically Monster and Career Builder and some of the other big boards, how they aren't quite as effective as they really should be, and really how you can tell the difference between a genuinely helpful job board
uh-huh.
And maybe a website that's designed just to collect some resumes. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. It's really kind of unfortunate, but what most people think of when they think of internet job hunting are what I call the super sites, Career Builder, Monster. There used to be Yahoo's Hot Jobs, but they've now been bought up by Monster.
Mm-hmm.
And really, their effectiveness is terrible. the figures that most people go with these days is about 4%. So right. For every 100 people that try to get a job this way, 96 will fail completely. Never get a job through these job boards. And in some cases, the success rate is even lower. One of the things that helps is that as the internet matures, people are learning how to use it better, both job hunters and employers. And what many employers are doing are using their own websites in order to post the jobs that are available at the company.
Mm-hmm.
So then the job hunter's task becomes, how do I find these companies and their websites where I should look? And lucky for us, there are a number of websites that actually go out to the employer's websites and come up with a list of the jobs available. One of these is a site called LinkedUp.com,
mm-hmm.
Which I should mention is different than LinkedIn. We're all used to hearing about LinkedIn mm-hmm. as a social networking sphere, but it might be an unfortunate choice of name, but it's still a very good site and one that job hunters should check out. They go every day to 20,000 different employer sites and grab the job postings off of those sites and then create a database for the job hunter to search through. That's very helpful.
Mark, to step away, the therapist in me goes to your... by the way, listeners, in case you tuned in, that wonderful voice you're hearing is Mark Emery Bowles, and we're talking to him about his guide to job hunting online. So online, you tend to think about boards and computers, but you have a whole chapter on people. And you talk about a bias towards language, and then you talk about weak ties. Could you talk a little bit about that bias to language? I found that kind of fascinating.
Well, there's a number of different asides in the book. I have a wide-ranging interest in many things in life.
That's cool.
One of the things that I found is that the way that we communicate is so deeply rooted in our evolution and the way we got here. We're so used to talking face to face and all the different little cues that we give and get
mm-hmm.
when we're speaking with one another. And these are all absent in things like email and texting and even phone calls.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important that when people are job hunting on the internet or really doing anything on the internet, although they tend to think of the internet as a collection of computers, it's just another way of reaching out to people.
Mm-hmm.
And all the time that we're job hunting, we're not just searching for jobs, we're searching for people. We're searching for the person who's going to want to hire us, a person that we're going to want to work for, in a company that has the sort of atmosphere that we will enjoy. So all of this is very important to keep in mind. And so when we're looking, you know, going through the process of job hunting, it's very important to look behind the computer and think of how, in our communications, we are affecting other people.
That's really interesting because it's very true. You're not looking for the job, you're looking for the person to connect you with that job.
So it would almost be more helpful or equally helpful to go to maybe some forums and chat rooms and that kind of thing of sites that are just like hobbies?
Yeah. That's a point that I bring up when I'm talking about social networking and sites like LinkedIn, where the primary connection you have with other people is a certain amount of ambition, but not much else. And often, I once heard it said that the fabric that binds relationships together is the memories of common experience. And that applies to just about any relationship you can think of, whether it's mm-hmm. a marriage, a friendship, a work relationship. So people are more likely to be helpful and to feel closer to you and want to be helpful when they feel that they have more in common with you. And if all that you have in common is ambition, that's not as strong as if there are other interests that you have that are perhaps a little more binding.
But then you talk about weak ties where those people don't necessarily have the common interest that your core, your family, your immediate friends have.
Exactly. Well, that's another approach. There's no single approach that works all the time in all situations.
That's true.
And the strength of weak ties was originally a paper by Mark Granovetter about 20 years ago now, I think. And basically, it works like this. We all know a certain number of people. For most people, it averages out to about 200. Most of the people we know, though, are in our core. We'll have 10 to 20 people that are closest to us, our closer friends that we see all the time. Their friends will tend to be the same as our friends. You know, we all know each other well, and we're kind of interlinked. And the farther out you get towards people you don't know well, the more likely you are to find people who know things that you don't.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're looking, you know, for instance, I don't know very many CEOs, but I know a lot of line workers and, you know, smaller people, or however we would put it. So if I want to find out how to find the CEOs, I have to start looking farther out away from me, away from my close friends, and start looking at the people that I know less about and I'm less close to. I still know them, but they're farther away, and they may be a few links away from me.
Is there one way in particular that you reach those? Are you saying through the LinkedIn's and LinkedIn-ups and those
yeah,
ways?
Yeah, there's a number of ways of doing it. It would be a mistake to think that the internet is the only way. The internet is certainly one marvelous way of reaching people that we don't have a lot of contact with on a day-to-day basis, especially with the explosion in social media. But there are many ways of doing this, and in many cases there are ways that are far more preferable than on the internet.
And one thing you talk about in here that I did want to get to before we run out of time is finding information that search engines like Google can't find. How do you go about doing that? I was hoping you could share that with us.
It's a bit complex, and it's listed far better in the book than I can explain in a few minutes here. But essentially, search engines are automated software programs. And they know how to go out and find certain information, but there's a lot of information that, for one reason or another, they can't find, or it's not financially in the interest of the search engine company for them to list that sort of information. And so it's important to go out to some of the other areas on the internet, which the book details how to find, and find things like directories, databases, and these can be enormously helpful. And as I said, the book details better than I can here on how to go about that particular approach.
Mark, I want to say that you did give the proper reference to Google, because as a good friend of my life says, Google sits on the right-hand side of God. I do, but you also blew my mind with something else you said in the book that I had to go lay down when I read, that Yahoo doesn't exist anymore, that it's really Bing behind the scenes. You blew my mind. I just blew my mind.
The fact that you have Yahoo in your email, right?
I know. I just blew my mind. Mark, it just blew my mind. I got to lay down. So I'm gonna ask
and
you
it's
this.
It's amazing because Yahoo, I mean, we all remember the time when Yahoo was king of the internet.
Yeah.
Google was this little upstart.
Mm-hmm.
And poor Yahoo has been eaten and
regurgitated.
Oh, it's so sad.
It's just not what it was. And it's kind of a shame. I mean, it's just market forces, but...
Right. Well, the nice thing about having competitors like Yahoo and Google were for a while is that it keeps everyone honest. You know what
Absolutely.
I mean? And that's kind of that's yeah. a good thing for everyone. You know, I'm going to leave us with and since you already let the cat out of the bag, I know you are not going to hide your head in the sand with this question because you're already, I know, probably proofing the next edition of this book because you already started writing it when the edits were going through this book. So what three things, if you will, could you leave our listeners with that either didn't make it in this book, were the most interesting thing you found, or maybe a resource that you just think is really cool, maybe an exclusive you can give our Job Talk listeners?
No pressure, yeah. sir.
Yeah, no pressure here. Well, I don't know about three things.
All
Let
right.
me just mention the first thing that comes to my mind. Research has shown that the average job hunter works at their job hunt less than 2 hours a day and yet watches television somewhere between 6 and 8 hours a day.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, that's a book in itself.
And so if that's the way that you're going to conduct your job hunt, you're going to be out of work a long time. What you've got to do is be better than average. You've got to remember that you're in competition with everybody else that's looking for a job. And in these economic times, that's a lot of people you're in competition with.
Right.
So it's important that you approach your job hunt as if it was your job. You've got to wake up in the morning and have a plan of what you're going to do that day and work at it for as long as you can.
That sounds like a seminar. Do you have a seminar coming up, Mark?
No.
It sounds really good, though.
But that's the basic thing, is that you've got to be above average. And make sure, and really that's what employers want to see. They don't want to have an average employee. They want someone who's above average. So whatever personality traits and work habits you can demonstrate in your job hunt, that's going to be that much more likely that you'll get hired when the time comes.
Well, and those are words really well spoken.
Yes, not only do you write well, but you speak darn
yeah.
good. Okay, well, thanks so much for being with us, and we're anxious for you to come back after everyone has read this book, Job Hunting Online, from cover to cover, with your next one, Mark.
Thank you very much. I've enjoyed very much speaking with you.
Okay, thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.